Strength and hope.
Hi, my name is Carl. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Carl.
I'm here because I lost the ability to control my drinking. That simple sentence is everything. From the time I wake up in the morning to the time I put my head on the pillow at the end of the night, I need to remember that because my whole life depends on it. And I forget that and I take a lot of things for granted. I come to this meeting to be reminded of how hard it was to get sober, how awful it was when I was drunk, and what I need to do to stay sober. And I have the ability to forget that in a heartbeat. That's why I have to come to these meetings, because I just forget everything. It's the most important place to be. Two quick housekeeping notes. One is, it is Father's Day, so I do want to salute everybody who is a father and everybody who also takes on the job of being a father. Anybody that does that, thank you. It's a wonderful job, and sober parents are the most wonderful people on the planet. I believe that. The second thing, I can't remember what that is. No. Very nervous. I was trying to get over being nervous being here, and I asked some people who'd been in this spot before what they did to get over their nervousness. The best advice I got was that I was simply to show up and treat this like another three-speaker meeting that would have a few more people than normal. Forgetting what an alcoholic means by a few. Okay. Now, the other deal. I stand here. I come to this meeting. I love this meeting. And I've always sat on that side of this event. And to come here and be on this side is quite amazing. And I'm struck with the understanding that apparently this works. We're all sitting here. And again, the other thing that today is about is acknowledging why we're here. That 83 years ago, two guys sat down because they could not drink. And then somehow they got together and amazing things began to happen. And then there were three guys and then five guys and then 10 people. And all of a sudden, there's a whole bunch of us staying sober. And that's what this is about. We're part of that. What happened was, I'm looking about how many people are here. How many years did it take to have this many alcoholics on this planet in recovery? We're so blessed. We come, there's a five-borough meeting booklet. We can go to meetings anywhere at any time. There was a time where if you were drunk, you weren't going to get sober unless you came to New York, or if they couldn't get you sober here, they sent you to Akron. You would actually have to go to Akron to get sober. And stay there and live with these people. I mean, they were wonderful that they did this, but how blessed are we to have this opportunity to do this, and this is here now. The other thing, it's horrible when you know you're going to speak here because you find yourself qualifying all week and trying to turn it down in your head and not do it and not have things to say. But you do make observations. And one of the ones that I made was that I'm here, and we're all here because of the people before us. It's all about acknowledging everybody that was here before us. That when we get here, the door is open and the coffee's on, and that's what it's all about. And there's somebody that's here that's going to tell me about recovery, and they're just here to pass on what they got from somebody else. Nobody makes this stuff up. Everybody gets it from somebody else. This is passed forward. One of the things I found when I got sober was they told me that I had to change the way I think and I act. I had to have all new thoughts and actions. And that part of being destroyed is that everything I think and do doesn't work anymore. So that when I come here, it's all thoughts and actions, and they come from you. It's part of the we, that you tell me new ways to think and act, and then I do it, and then amazing things happen, and then I turn around to the next guy and tell him what has now become the way I think and I act, but to him it's new. And that's what's so great about this. So it's acknowledging all the people before us. I hope I say some things today that the people in the Hereafter group said to me that there's nobody here to say anymore unless I say it. So if you know old-timers or people that aren't here anymore and they told you something that's really wonderful that you keep in your head that keeps you sober, repeat it to somebody else so that everybody else has an opportunity to share it and it doesn't die. Because if that dies, we die. Whatever it was that was so special that kept you sober, we got to tell other people about it. So I'm here hoping that some of those guys come out. And if I remember who they were when I say it, I'll give them credit for it because that's the way this thing works. I'm one of those people that, like a lot of us, I don't like this planet. When I was growing up as a kid, I just did not like the rules. I did not like what you had to do. I did not like what you had to be. And I hated everything about my life, and I felt very lost and stupid. But the most problematical part of that is that I am a coward, so that I could not speak up and yell at people and say no. There are a lot of us that have that ability. I was not one of them. I'm one of those people that to this day, I have a problem having an opinion. I have a problem telling you what I really think. I have a problem being who I am. And as I get sober longer and longer, it comes out. But it's one of my problems. So back then, I'm basically somebody who's upset with everything and not saying a word. And I'm walking around in my life just really upset, but not being able to, I don't know what to do about it. And I feel lost. You know, I've gone to a lot of meetings. I've heard a lot of people talk about just feeling like they're on the wrong planet. You know, I just don't get what other people do. I see other people laugh. I see other people smile and do things. And when I try to do it, I just don't get this feeling of belonging. I just don't understand what it is. And I spent a lot of years walking around like that. I'm one of those people where if you put me in a room full of Southerners, I have an accent in 20 minutes. Because I just have this ability to adapt and be what is needed, but I don't know who I am. And I'm just dying to know who I am, and I don't know, and I'm afraid to ask. And again, I'm a coward. I don't want you to know that I'm so lost and I'm so afraid. This continued for a number of years until I ran into liquor. Easiest way to put this all together, I was going to say to bottle it, but that's probably not a good phrase. I loved to drink blackberry brandy. It was my favorite drink, mostly because in the early days I could take it to a party and nobody else would drink it. It would be my bottle and I would nurse it. My first run-ins with blackberry brandy were, I knew I had a problem and that I was not like other people, because when I explained my physical and emotional reaction to alcohol, it's not like people who are not alcoholics. I first heard it, I kind of knew what it was, and I love coming to AA because there are things that float around in my consciousness that I can't put a word on or a picture to, and then what happens is I hear somebody else say it, and it's like, that's what it is. And Joe and Charlie were the first two people to talk about this in a way I understood. And they talked about taking that first sip where it touches your lips. And for me, it's blackberry brandy. And from the second it touches your lips, even though it takes 3 seconds to swallow and it seems like it's 10 minutes, there's just this slow burning warm sensation on my lips. And then it slowly creeps down into my throat. And it starts to go into my chest and my lungs. And I start to feel warm and nice. And it goes all the way down my arms to my fingertips. And it's going down to my stomach. And it's feeling warm and good. And all the way down to my toes. And I have this remarkable long, long experience that was it. But it seemed that long to me. This is not a normal reaction to booze. And at the end of it, I take this incredibly deep breath, and I feel good. And that's why we're here, because we got that feeling out of it. But there's more to the story, which is where it gets interesting. But I have this remarkable physical reaction to booze, and I have an amazing emotional reaction to booze, which is that I suddenly feel like I belong everywhere. I'm suddenly comfortable, And again, anything I tell you is something I learned when I was here. It was all about finding ease and comfort, that I was suddenly comfortable where I was, that I could suddenly relax. And that's all I wanted. It was all I was looking for. And there it was in the bottle, you know. So while I'm upset with God for not putting it in me in the first place, at least he's given me a place to find it and get it and use it. So this is good. So I guess it's become my religion. I didn't realize that till right now. But now I go to the bottle for everything. And what happens is, again, a brief encapsulation. I would drink to do everything because I found that I was frightened and didn't know how to do things. So I'm one of those people that would have to drink to go out to drink, you know, because I was just uncomfortable hanging around people, but I had to do this. So I would go out, and let's say I went to a club and I wanted to dance. I'd be too nervous to dance. I would be feeling awkward. I'd have two drinks, and then I would be nice and calm, and I would cool, and I'd go and I'd dance, and it'd be great. So I'm sitting here thinking, and this is the alcoholic brain that we have. I'm saying, gee, if I feel this good with two drinks, how good would I feel with four? You know? So now I decide to have four drinks, but what winds up happening is that when you have the four drinks, you don't get up to dance. You don't get off the bar stool. You sit and you have the fourth drink and then the fifth drink and the sixth drink. So my entire life was one where the things that I was drinking to have the freedom and the courage and the energy to do, I was now drinking myself right through them. With the intention, as I sat down to drink, was I'm going to get up and do that. But I didn't. And that's the way my whole life went, that I wound up drinking my way through everything, but not doing it. Drinking my way through not doing anything, I guess, is the best way to say that. And then what happens is I don't know anything about this disease, so I go through all the phases of alcoholism as it gets progressively worse. I drink more and more. I drink because all I want to do is get nice. You know that place, Nice. It's like you have a couple of drinks. We go there a lot in the beginning. The train stops there all the time. You get out. It's a nice place. You can stay for a while. Normal people go to Nice every time they drink, okay? But we go, and the train doesn't stop at Nice anymore. You know, it's like it starts to go to Oh No. And I don't mean Yoko. It's really all these places, and eventually the train winds up crashing every time. I'm a blackout drinker, so I wake up on the other end of the blackout. I'm ashamed of what I did again, and I have no idea why I did it. I had no idea why I drank too much. And I spent a number of years, the next maybe 10 years, trying to control my drinking, or at least thinking what I thought was control. I said that I lost the ability to control it. I think the truth was that control masquerades itself as acceptable damage, and that whatever I lose, I find some way for it to be okay, and that means I have control. And so no matter what I drink and no matter what I destroy, it's like I didn't need that. I didn't need that girlfriend. I didn't need that job. I didn't need to live there. It was a crappy house. Whatever it is, I find some reason to not need it anymore. And I go into all the things where I get beat up really badly in blackouts because I'm really tiny and stupid and can't fight well. To broken nose, eyeballs hanging out, really bad stuff, and then lying to the police about what happened, you know, that I was rescuing somebody. And then having to live for years telling lies to people about what happened when the truth, and then I start to forget what the truth is because I'm lying so much. Through all of this, I decided I'm a musician. I'm playing in a band. I'm not particularly good. I'm not particularly bad. I'm kind of right in the middle, which is where every alcoholic hates to be. Till I get here, which is where you need to be. I'm playing, and I have some really nice career choices and opportunities that I destroy because I'm drinking. I either show up drunk or I don't show up at all, stuff like that. I'm going along, and what's happening to me is what's happening to a lot of people. I drink till I hit a jackpot, and then I try not to drink as hard as I possibly can, and I really try and hang out, but after a period of time, my stomach starts rolling, my head starts spinning, and the little voice, you know, kind of like Field of Dreams, where it says, if you build it, they'll come. The little voice says, if you have a drink, you'll feel better. You know, and it slowly does that, and eventually I hold on as long as I can, but I feel so bad I just have to have a drink because I just want to feel nice, and I don't care where the train crashes or not. I just don't want to feel the way I feel, and I wind up picking up. So what happens is I'm living this all the time with these breakdowns and constantly hitting jackpots, and John Lennon dies, and a little voice in my head says he died and he wasn't even trying, and you're going to die soon too. So having a great brain, I decided I would take John's place in the Beatles. And hey, I'm in the right place, right? So I decide I'm not going to drink anymore. And now I go out and now I start doing what we all do when we get in that mode where we start going to the gym and we start looking good and we start getting fit and everything. You know, hey, I'm living sober. This is great. Now, I've never been to any meetings, so what happens now is real important because I did all my ugly stuff before I got here, okay? But I decide I'm sober from the night he dies to New Year's Eve, and then I decide on New Year's Eve that I'm going to celebrate not drinking by drinking, okay? Okay, but I don't know about the crazy stuff because I haven't been here yet, but I decide that's a good idea. So I have some champagne. I take a sip. It's horrible, so I have three, okay? This, I don't know this because I haven't been here yet, but this is the disease showing me all of this stuff. It's showing me that I'm crazy. It's showing me that I trigger the compulsion. And then the worst thing that happens that could happen is that nothing happens. Okay? So now I do controlled drinking because everybody know I stopped. So for the first time in my life, I'm doing sneak drinking. And it was the worst period of my life because I could not drink the way I wanted to drink. I wanted the freedom to get so drunk I passed out. I wanted the freedom to fall upstairs. I wanted the freedom to get beat up and not pay my bill. But somehow that masquerades as freedom. The inability to drink the way I want was a horrible, horrible thing. Even though nothing good happened when I drank, my brain had it that it was terrible. And I walked around angry and just angry in a way. It was just terrible. Somewhere in early March, I went on a ski trip. And I had been talking to a fellow who was a member of the psychiatric community who said that I should not have to control my drinking. I deserved to drink the way I wanted to drink. And since he was a therapist someplace, I had the medical community's authority, okay to go drink. So I went on a ski trip, and I drank the way I wanted to drink. As soon as we got there, I grabbed a bottle of wine, I popped the cork, and I drank it right out of the bottle. The host was horrified. And I said, don't worry, I'm going to finish the bottle. Nothing will be wasted. This bottle will have done its job, you know. So I gulped it down, and I drank the way I wanted to drink, and I blacked out. I woke up the next morning in the snow, in my socks and my underwear. And while it's funny, it's not. It's again, if you've experienced it, it's inside my soul is crying right now because it's why I'm here. And I was at the ski trip with a whole bunch of musicians that I had so wanted to impress, that I had so wanted to get to be good friends with, and they were all just laughing at me. And I had made that slight turn, that slight left, you know. Spinal Tap, they say there's a thin line between clever and stupid, and I made the pivot. And And then on the way home, I had, I don't know about you, I was in a bus full of people, but when I'm seriously hungover, my ESP is incredibly powerful. And I knew what everybody in the bus was thinking. And it was horrible. It was truly horrible. I went to Staten Island to play in a little club where I was now playing alone because nobody would play in a band with me. And I got on stage that night, and my hand was shaking. And it was no big deal. Normally when my hand shakes, a couple of shots of brandy, it's nice and calm, you know, like Lee Marvin and Cat Ballou. Anyway, my hand's shaking. So I take the brandy, and that night my hand wouldn't stop shaking. Am I close?
No,
you didn't. Oh. Okay. And then my voice is raspy, okay? And normally if my voice is raspy, a couple of shots of brandy, my voice is fine. And that night I took the shots of brandy, and my voice wasn't fine. I couldn't sing. And as I stood on stage there that night for the first time in my life, my hands are shaking, I can't sing, and I couldn't remember the words to any of the songs that I was playing. And for the first time in my life, booze had failed me in a way it had never failed before. And I had dropped five floors. I had gone from being able to not do the thing that I love most. And I was terribly frightened, and I was afraid of booze in a way I'd never been afraid of booze in my life before. And I didn't know what to do. I had friends who'd been to AA, so I went to meetings. My first meeting was at Park West in Brooklyn, and I walked in totally destroyed, and the people there knew it. And I'm sure you know it. You know when somebody's done. There's just nothing left inside. There's just a shell that shows up. And I'm saying, what do I have to do to stay sober? I'll do anything. And then they told me, and I didn't want to do it. The first thing I walked in, and I truly meant this when I said it, I don't know what's wrong with me. You know, I used to be able to drink and feel okay. Now I drink, and I drink too much, and I just don't know what to do. I do not know how to not drink. So I went to that meeting, and I said, what do I need to do? Well, and they said, we suggest you go home tonight and you pray, okay? And when you pray, and I said, I can't pray. I said, we're going to tell you, and this is what's so great about this recovery. No one told me what to do. They said, sit down and we'll tell you what we did. And if you identify with it, then we'll tell you what we did to get better. And that's where the word admitted comes in. Admitted is not like some question and answer where they taught you. Admitting is where you simply sit here and nod your head and say, yeah, that's what I did. Yeah, that's what I did. And slowly it breaks. So I admitted, yeah, I got this stuff wrong with me. So when I went home that night, they said pray, and I did. I didn't want to. They said pray to whatever you don't believe in. Ask it to keep you sober tonight. Ask it to help you stay sober in the morning. Do whatever it takes. I have not had a drink since that night that I said that first prayer. I don't know what I believe in as far as a higher power. I'm sorry I didn't get up to any of the other stuff that I wanted to. But I believe in something. And it changes all the time. And that was back on March 6th of 1981, okay? So I've been sober. No, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to clap because this works. Not for me. There's nothing special about me being up here. One of the promises is that if you come here and you do what's suggested, you don't drink. All I am is a fulfillment of those promises. This is what you get. You get that. You don't come here to get sober. I find, you know, in the beginning, I came here just to be sober for 3 weeks, just to have time. I never believed anybody that had time, particularly the amount I have. I knew I was going to drink in 2 weeks because I always did. And then somehow I came here with no belief. I came to believe that this works, okay? And that's the whole deal. Come to these meetings. Come to people talking and say, yeah, that's what's wrong with me. That's what the deal is. And then you come to believe that it works and that it will work for you. So I've come to find out that it's not that I get sober for 6 months. I've been sober for a lifetime, and it's been amazing. And I would not give any of it back, no matter how crazy or weird it's been. It's the longer you're sober, the more precious you find out what this sober identity is. I'm here to let you know it can happen. And I'm sorry, somebody just held up a sign. I thought it was like where you're diving, they give you 9.9 and that kind of stuff. I got a one for 1 minute. But I appreciate it. Thank you. Just doing our jobs here. So anyway, apparently the universe feels that I have said enough. So I shall sit down. I thank everyone who was involved in allowing me to speak here, and for all of you, and for keeping me sober, because I come to these meetings and you tell me what to do and how it works. So thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you, Carl.